Our model really is centered around deep collaboration and on-the-ground knowledge, and we believe that the solutions that are being built need to be built by local entrepreneurs, and the funding solutions really also need to be created by partners that are on the ground who really understand the different dynamics of the ecosystem of a given market.
A lot of foreign investors are obviously very wary of a lot of the instability in the different markets in Africa. And not to say that these four markets that you've mentioned are 100% stable, but there is some semblance of stability in these markets that makes foreign investors more comfortable to come in.
Welcome back to Equity Merchants. This week, we're changing things a bit. Rather than one guest, we have two, and our guests are Jack Nellinger and Lorraine Asher. Jack is a co-founder and partner at Capria Ventures, while Lorraine is an associate with the firm working out of Africa. In this episode, we discuss how startups can stand out when reaching out to VCs, what Capria Ventures looks out for when choosing local fund managers, and a range of other topics. As always, it promises to be insightful, but before we dive in, let's take a message from the TechPoint Africa business team.
Hi, I'm Abisola Adenoga, the head of business at TechPoint Africa. Are you an early stage startup looking for brand awareness for your organization? In search of potential investors and product engagement, leverage TechPoint Africa's extensive network of startups, tech enthusiasts, investors, and executives on the African continent and beyond to elevate your brand and business. For inquiries, please send us an email to business@techpoint.africa or click on the link in the description. Together, let's take your business to the next level.
Hello, Jack and Lorraine. Welcome to Equity Merchants. First of all, can we all introduce ourselves?
Yes, well, thank you. Thank you very much for having us. My name is Jack Nellinger, and I'm a co-founder and partner of Capria.
And my name is Lorraine Achar, and I'm an associate at Capria.
All right. So when you're not an associate at Capria, Lorraine, who are you outside your work?
The biggest thing is I'm a mother of two, so that takes up a lot of my time. So outside of Capri, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, and I'm also just a fun, loving young woman, I would say.
Okay, Jack, how about you?
What am I outside of Capri? I'm a curious person who likes to explore and travel, enjoy reading good books and being active outside in nature and spending time with friends and community.
All right. Why did you start Capria Ventures, and when did you start?
Yeah, so the history of Capria Ventures, Will Poole and Dave Richards got started doing direct investing in India in the early stage back in the 2012-2013 period. And a couple of years after that, I had been leaving a management and strategic consulting firm that I had started. And we had worked together on a number of different things in the past, and they were particularly interested in looking at the early stage landscape on a global basis and really asking the question around how do we unlock capital for more entrepreneurs in emerging markets that are solving interesting problems and have the ability to build both profitable and impactful businesses. And so we had worked together on a number of things in the acceleration and startup space over the years and decided to look at this opportunity and figure out what we could do. And through those discussions, through a long customer discovery period, ended up launching Capria.
Okay. So Capria invests in both entrepreneurs and funds. I'm curious, how does that work? Because my understanding of VC is that there's an LP who invests in a VC firm, and then the VC firm gets to do the work of investing in these startups. But you invest in both founders and funds. So can you explain how that works?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So our model really is centered around deep collaboration and on-the-ground knowledge, and we believe that the solutions that are being built need to be built by local entrepreneurs, and the funding solutions really also need to be created by partners that are on the ground who really understand the different dynamics of the ecosystem of a given market, the different cultural nuances and regulatory environment. And so our approach has been to partner with fund managers, work deeply with them, and invest in the best early growth companies as they're growing and scaling and really reaching product market fit. And so we're excited about the progress that we've seen over the past couple of years and look forward to continuing to build out that global network of both CEOs and fund managers here over time.
So how many funds have you partnered with or invested in Africa?
So right now we have three fund managers that are live, and Lorraine can hit a couple of the highlights there.
Okay. Yeah, so as Jack mentioned, we have three fund managers in Africa at the moment. We have Global Ventures that are based in Dubai but invest across sub-Saharan Africa and the MENA region. We have Lateral. They sit in Lateral Frontiers. They sit in Kenya and invest across Kenya and Nigeria. They currently are raising their fund too. We invested in their first fund. And we have Atlantica Ventures that just got to their first close recently and will start deploying capital. Again, it's a Pan-African fund, so really investing across sub-Saharan Africa.
All right. So what do you look for in these fund managers?
Well, there's a couple of key things. One, looking at their previous investment experience. What's their track record? So even if they haven't actually launched a fund before, do they have investing experience that really maps to the strategy that they're looking to execute? The other thing that we look for is that we do like to see a combination of both investing and operating experience. If you're going to be investing in the early stages, you know, you really need to understand what the entrepreneurs are going through and be able to provide them with the support that they need at any given time. I think the other thing that we look at is really understanding, you know, what's a minimum viable fund size, what sectors are they targeting, and do they have the expertise in that sector, and do we think that the opportunity really matches the way that they're trying to deploy capital, and so that's a couple. Our list is fairly long and extensive as we evaluate different managers, but one other thing that is definitely important to us is that collaborative component, and so we're really looking for managers that want to come together and learn from peers, not just across Africa, but also Latin America, India, and Southeast Asia, because despite market differences, there are also things that you can, you know, pattern match against in order to be a more effective investor. So those are a couple of things.
Just to add one more thing that Jack also spoke about at the beginning of this was talking about the local teams. So as Jack mentioned, we are looking for managers that have the local context. So it's very important to have partners that do have that local context. So they are local managers. They do sit in the regions as well. So they have a presence and they have networks in the regions as well. So I think that's another important thing that we look for.
Okay. So do you envision a future where probably one of the people who have worked with you in Africa, now not a fund manager, probably one of your investment analysts, you send the person out to start a new fund? Is that something that you could possibly experiment with in the future?
We would love to see people, you know, fulfill their path or their journey and whatever form that takes. I think the way that we think about our team and building up our team is really to not just, you know, support what we're doing at Capria, but to support each person's, you know, individual ambitions. And certainly in our work, there's a lot that is learned from various fund managers, and that learning goes both ways, both what we can learn from them and they can learn from us. But certainly if there are people that come through Capria and want to launch a fund in the future, we would love to see that, and love to see, you know, more funds come online there across the continent.
All right. So a lot of people are probably very familiar with how startups work, and especially for Africans, it's not very, very familiar. Traditional means of financing has always been banks and probably loans from friends and family. And now you have VC, where I need an idea and probably some proof that I can execute on this idea, and then I get money from practically total strangers, and all I have to give up is equity in my company. So the fact that a business has a technology component, does that automatically make it a good fit for VCs?
So I think it would vary for that. So at Capria, we invest at the early growth stage. So that means we are looking for companies that have already hit the product market fit. So we probably would not be investing in an idea, would not be coming in at the ideation stage, but we would be coming in when there's that market fit, and there's also that path to scalability, path to profitability. So we wouldn't come in at that stage, but definitely there are other VCs, accelerators, incubators that also come in at that stage at the ideation phase. So, yeah.
And I would say that it doesn't necessarily, just because you have a tech component, doesn't necessarily mean VC is the path for you. When thinking about financing your company, there's multiple tools out there and available to you. And depending on how you're looking to build your company, how you're looking to grow and scale, you need to evaluate those options, whether or not debt is appropriate, whether or not equity investment is appropriate. And so there's multiple paths, and oftentimes it requires a lot of creativity.
As a VC, you expect to make some returns on your investments. How long do you expect to wait for you to get these returns?
Well, return profile, you know, if you think about a traditional 10-year closed-end fund for a VC firm, you know, you're going to have an investment period anywhere from 3 to 5 years where you're writing your initial checks, and then you'll likely have some available follow-on capital that you might be deploying along the tail end of that and into the next few years, you know, after which you're starting to look at what it takes to liquidate the investment. And so the hold periods can be, you know, 7, 8 years, even longer. However, in some cases, it might be much shorter. As an example, we had a co-investment that we did that happened to be in Latin America, but that investment, you know, we had in our portfolio for about 18 months, and then an acquisition opportunity came up, and so that was a much shorter window. So it varies, but you know, we're in it for the long term, and with the entrepreneurs as they look to really build and scale their companies.
All right. The main ways for you to get these returns are from IPOs or acquisitions. Now, prior to investing, do you discuss the manner of an exit with entrepreneurs, or is it just something that is left unsaid?
I think that in terms of having a conversation with the entrepreneur, it's really understanding how they see the growth of the company and where they see the company going, and that does include potential exit opportunities in the future. And you know, I think in going through due diligence with a founder and a CEO, you know, part of that is really understanding their ethos and what's driving them. Ultimately, they're the one running the show, and so to really have an understanding of what their vision is a really important component of that, and understanding if there's alignment in terms of the future path of the business.
Okay. So going by that, how long does it take you to give a startup a definitive yes or no?
Well, that one varies. That can definitely vary quite a bit. And so just it really depends on the particular deal and the aspects of the deal, and how ready the company is to move forward and progress in the due diligence discussions. But we can move fairly quickly, and part of the reason we're able to move fairly quickly is that our fund manager partners have often been working with entrepreneurs and CEOs for a fairly extended period of time. And so in some cases, we might need to get through our diligence process in 2-3 weeks. And in other cases, it's getting to know entrepreneurs much earlier, building the relationship over time, and seeing how rounds progress. If in the event that an opportunity might be too early for us, or we might want to see how the company is doing over time.
Having invested across several continents, what would you say is the biggest difference? It could be more than one, but what would you say is the biggest difference between investing in Europe or America and investing in Africa?
Well, our investment activity holistically is across the Global South broadly. So Latin America, Africa, India, and Southeast Asia. That said, we do have experience in investing in the US, in Europe as well. Yeah. But I would say that one of the big differences is just the general availability of early stage or early growth risk capital. The level of ecosystem development obviously varies. That's true across any region. But I think that despite the strong uptick, which is really exciting to see in terms of funding across the continent, it's still relatively small when taking a step back and looking at the global landscape. And we think that's an immense opportunity. And there are plenty of entrepreneurs across the continent building, growing, and scaling interesting businesses that could really put that early stage or early growth capital to use. And so I think that's one difference. And I think another difference really stems from, or another change I should say, that we're starting to see is, you know, in addition to some of the local funds starting to accelerate their momentum and progress on the fundraising front, I think we're seeing an uptick in the level of interest from international players that are starting to look at some of those companies that are being funded. And so I think that's an exciting development for the continent in terms of people really recognizing the potential that's been seen by many for a while, but hasn't necessarily been reflected in terms of the overall quantum of dollars being put to work.
All right. Lauren, you're on the ground in Africa. You have a very good understanding of what the ecosystem in Africa looks. Every year, you see that record-breaking numbers are hit by startups, but we have women receiving less money, and we have most of the money going to just four countries, Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, and Egypt. So first, why do you think most other countries, apart from this, for get less funding, and why do you think women do not get as much funding as men do get?
That's a interesting loaded question. I think one is the development of infrastructure, the infrastructure that's needed to support some of these startups and investors coming in. Some of it may be regulatory, where you have maybe laws that have been set that are not friendly to investors, so they're not willing to go into some of these markets. And the basic infrastructure that is set up for different, like fintechs or mobility or logistics companies to play in. So I think these are the pioneer markets in terms of the four that you mentioned, to build these infrastructures and to have regulations that are more friendly for investors to want to come in and to want to invest in these markets. Another challenge I think that we see is a lot of foreign investors are obviously very wary of a lot of the instability in the different markets in Africa. And not to say that these four markets that you've mentioned are 100% stable, but there is some semblance of stability in these markets that makes foreign investors more comfortable to come in. But we are seeing this now. We are seeing more countries coming in and taking a piece of the pie. We're seeing Ghana, we're seeing Rwanda coming in. So there's a lot more countries that are now coming in, and we're going to see this split, I think, even out as the years go by. So it won't just be concentrated in these four markets going forward. In terms of women funding, I mean, speaking to a lot of investors, you know, the challenge is always that the pipeline is not there, which is a difficult one to swallow, because I do believe that the pipeline is there, but what is needed is to have more diversity in decision-making roles. And when we see diversity in those decision-making roles, then we'll see more women being invested in. And we are starting to see that. We are starting to see funds that are more diverse. If you look at our portfolio, out of the three funds that I mentioned, fund managers that I mentioned, two of them have women partners. And then when we start to see that a lot more, then we'll start to see that change coming up. So I think, one, we are starting to see the change at the top, which will start to affect the pipeline that is being invested in. And we are also starting to see like accelerators coming in and different initiatives by different organizations that are trying to build up that pipeline as well and build up tech talent in women specifically. So it is something that we're not there yet, but we can see the steps that are being taken to change that.
Okay. So in the first meeting you take with a startup founder, what are you expecting to see from the founder?
First, the ability to sell their product. I think the ability to be able to sell you what it is that they're doing, which is something that we're seeing a lot more. I think that's something that we're seeing a lot of founders coming in with the confidence in their product, which gives you the confidence as well to want to invest in these founders. We're looking for people who have experience in the space that they're playing in. So when they're speaking about their product, they're talking about the challenges that have been faced in that particular space, and they're very clear about the solution that they're building to solve for some of these challenges. So that clarity, and that clarity comes from experience, from playing in that space. So like I would say experience, you're looking for a team that knows what they're doing, are able to sell what they're doing as well. There's the selling language that I think is important to be able to draw people in. And you're looking for people that are solving for challenges that are affecting the mass population. So we're looking for entrepreneurs that are also really thinking about the effect that their product will have or their business will have for the majority of the population.
All right, so for the founders that you invest in, what kind of founders do you look out for? So a lot of funds are very, very specific. So they only invest in clean tech or invest in fintech. So are you sector agnostic or do you just invest in any sector?
We have core sectors that we look at. But okay. I wouldn't say that those are exclusive sectors. So we look at fintech, health tech, ed tech, ag tech, job tech, and logistics. But these are not exclusive sectors. It does not mean that we won't look at companies that are not in these sectors. What we're looking for is, as I mentioned earlier, is companies that are providing solutions, again, that are really solving for the most critical challenges that are facing the different regions and the different markets, and that you can scale and replicate in other markets, not just Kenya, not just Nigeria, but can be replicated in other markets as well. So for us, it's about what impact does your solution have or your business have on the mass population is what I would say. So we're not as sector agnostic. We do have our core sectors, but it's not exclusive to those sectors. We will look at companies playing outside the sector that I mentioned earlier.
And we also look to see where we can add value overall to the firm. And so, you know, what expertise are we bringing? What expertise do our fund manager partners bring? And, you know, is this company really at an inflection point in terms of their growth? And so the sectors that Lorraine mentioned are, you know, the sectors where we've seen quite a bit of interesting deal flow and, you know, look forward to continuing to track that over time.
All right. So, Jack, what is the biggest misconception that people outside investment spaces have about VC?
That's a great question. I think that oftentimes people underestimate the operational work and infrastructure that it really takes in order to be effective in this industry. I think that that it can be perceived as you raise money from your investors, you go find great entrepreneurs, you write checks, and then suddenly the returns come. But the reality is that in order to do that effectively, not only do you have to have a great team and great partners, great relationships, be constantly learning, but you also need to put in place the right tools, systems, review processes, and checks in order to really be effective. So I think that's probably the one that I would put up there as number one.
At the early stage of a business, a lot of businesses may not consider a corporate governance structure. but that structure is actually needed for startups to thrive. So what does corporate governance look like, or what should it look like for an early stage startup?
Yeah, well, I mean, the governance structure will change over time. You know, in the early days, you know, you're not going to have a huge formal board, but as you start to take on investors, you know, institutional investors are going to look to have a seat at the table, and so the progression being pretty much predominantly founder driven to founder plus one of the key investors plus outside advisor, and then as you progress further into your journey, you'll continue to add to that mix and modify, you know, who's at the table to really provide that guidance, and to make sure that the checks are in place in order for that company to stay on the right path and to continue to grow and scale in the way that is intended.
All right. So having a co-founder can be very helpful. You could get someone to bounce ideas off, someone to lean on when things are going very rough. But that's also one of the reasons a lot of startups end up as failures. What are your tips for founders to manage the co-founder relationship?
That list could be long. I think if I had to think about a couple that I would put there up at the top, I would say really ensuring that you're clear on the vision for the company and not viewing that as a one-time conversation, but an ongoing conversation. The business inevitably is going to evolve and change in different ways, and to ensure that you're on the same page is, you know, vitally important. And so I think that's one. The second, which relates to that point, but also is a bit more broad, is really keeping the open lines of communication, being able to provide each other with both positive feedback as well as critical feedback, keep the dialogue open on how you're each mutually or individually seeing the business, and what changes you think need to be made or where you think you need to really invest further in order to support the company's growth. And so I think that those are two that I would certainly put up at the top of the list. And you know, as the company's growing and scaling, and there's more and more to be done and responsibilities start to be divided up in different ways, you know, really honing in on those two things can go a really long way.
Okay. So have you ever held back from investing in a startup because of an existing investor?
I would say that not because of an existing investor in terms of, you know, a specific investor. I'd say we have certainly held up and not moved forward with a given deal based on certain requests from an investor, or certain terms that were brought forward that we didn't necessarily think were conducive with the way that we were looking to structure the deal, or in a way that we felt was supportive of the company and where they needed to get. And so, you know, that varies in terms of each specific deal, and there's different things to look at. But that's been our experience so far.
Considering you not only invest in startups, you also invest in funds, so that's like a lot. So I'm going to assume you also provide support to the portfolio companies from these other funds. So that's a lot of work. How do you stay productive as a VC? So Jack, you will answer first, and Lauren, especially because she's a mother, so she has a lot on her plate already. So how do you juggle all of that?
Yes, she's amazing at the juggling act. But, you know, I think ultimately that's our job, right? Our job is to find great people building great companies and work alongside them and support them on that journey in whatever way we can. And so, you know, on the productivity front, you know, I think part of that stems from how do you get the right systems in place in order to be able to manage all the different things that need to be done as you're evaluating transactions, as you're raising capital for new funds, as you're managing the portfolio. And one of the things that we have chosen to do is really to tap into the collective knowledge of the network of CEOs and of fund managers. And so rather than just facilitate one-on-one conversations, what community can you convene? Are there multiple CEOs on different parts of their journey and similar verticals that could come together and learn from each other, that come together across the various regions? And that allows you to reach things at a different level of scale, as opposed to the you know, direct one-on-one every single time. So that's definitely one component, but I'll let Lorraine speak to the various juggling acts she does, both within Capri and outside Capri.
Yeah, no, I think just to echo that, Jack, we really do leverage on that network, and that has really proven to be very valuable, having the network that we can be able to support. A founder in Nigeria, for example, can speak to a founder in Latin America that's in the same space and get insights and different knowledge sets from them and learn from each other. And then something else, I think at Capria, specific to Capria, I think also the culture at Capria is such that it makes it easy to juggle multiple things because of the fact that really there's an open door policy where you can really speak up when things become too much and say, okay, now I need to drop a few things here and there, or when you feel like you can pick things up. So I think the culture is also a very important thing at Capria, where we really are it's not a hierarchical system. So everyone is, you know, gets their hands wet, and everyone, you know, goes in and does everything. So from the partners to the associates to the fellows, we're all doing everything together. So we're all juggling together. So I think the culture really makes it easy for, not easy, but manageable for the juggling act to happen. Yeah.
Okay. So how do you handle hiring? Now, not for the portfolio companies, how do you handle hiring for roles at Capria? What has that experience been like?
Yeah, well, we're in the midst of that right now. So we're actually looking to bring on someone to join Lorraine and Mawa in Nairobi, or potentially based elsewhere. As we've all learned through COVID and through the pandemic, you know, oftentimes our work is virtual, or you can sit in different places, but we'd like to bring that person on in one of the up rising tech hubs, and so multiple options are across the continent. But you know, we're really looking for people that inherently connect with the long term vision that we have, and that have that long term mindset and continuous learning mindset. You know, if there's one thing that's true on a global basis within this industry, is that really in order to be effective, it is a continuous learning journey. And so we look for people that are really interested in taking initiative, that are thinking entrepreneurially, they're collaborative, and they're looking to come in to support not only each other across the team, but also our partners both within Africa as well as around the world.
Okay, Lauren, can you share how you got into VC?
Sure thing. So I think I've always had some sort of entrepreneurial spirit. I've started a few businesses in my lifetime. Obviously, none have been that successful, but I've always been very curious about, you know, that side of things. So prior to joining Capria, I was in investment banking. So I've always been in the investment space in one way or another. But because I've always been keen about the entrepreneurial space and being in investment banking, I was very aware of the fact that there's a massive gap in terms of financing for these entrepreneurs. So see multiple people who have really great ideas, but are not able to pivot those ideas because of lack of capital. Working from a bank, I experienced that multiple times. So I was very keen to operate in a space that can change that narrative. So I really wanted to work with entrepreneurs, work with founders, to be able to help them build up those ideas into, you know, successful businesses. And that's how I got into VC, simply.
Okay. So for people who are looking to get into VC, what are some skills that you would advise them to have? So obviously not everyone is going to like start businesses like you, but what skills would you advise them to have?
So in terms of hard skills, I think the hard skills you can always learn, to be honest, because I have seen people who've come from completely different backgrounds in terms of educational backgrounds and have transitioned very well into the VC space. And obviously, you know, the financial skills, you can build that out as you go. I think there's that curiosity that you need to have. You really need to be curious, to want to learn more and understand things differently. VC is an ever-changing space. So what you know today may not be relevant tomorrow. So the curiosity to always want to learn, to always want to upskill yourself, to always want to know what's new in the market, what's happening, I think that's really important. That's an important skill to have, or an important, just an important thing to have within you if you want to join the VC space. I think also, I feel like everything else, if you have the curiosity to want to learn more, everything else you can build out, the soft and hard skills, you could always learn how to navigate that environment. So for me, it was easier just because I had a financial background, so it was an easier, you know, way for me to get in, but I wouldn't say that it's impossible without that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So earlier you mentioned that while you're working in investment banking, you discovered that there was a funding gap for businesses. And that means it's going to be very difficult, or maybe not very difficult, but the competition to get funded by VCs is going to be really tough. How do you advise a startup founder to make themselves stand out among the sea of applications that you'd probably get as a VC?
One, I think really know what it is you're building and who it is you're building it for. So really know your market, know what the gaps are, and be very clear about what it is exactly you're trying to solve for. I think that's just the basic thing, because there are founders who, you know, you had someone, you know, started some sort of business and you thought it was a good idea and decided to replicate the same without understanding what's happening in that market, what are the challenges, and what is your solution really solving for. So I believe that if you understand these aspects, then I think that's a first step into building a really good business.
We've talked a lot about what you look out for in startups. So what should founders look out for when they are choosing a VC? Are there specific qualities that they should be wary of or that they should look out for?
I think that's a really good question. And
Lorraine's gotten enthusiastic, yes.
You know, it's a good question, because it's a question that we like to ask the founders that we talk to also understand, are you just looking for any money, or are you very conscious about the kind of money that you want into your business? So I would say look for a partner. Look for not just someone who's going to write a check and, you know, forget about you. So look for someone who's really keen about wanting to see your business grow and is willing to put in the work to help you build your business, either by, you know, making the right kind of introductions, or you have, you know, people who have more on the operational side who can come and really help you navigate some of the operational issues in your business. So really, I think it's just about looking for a partner and not just a check.
Okay. Jack, do you have anything to add?
Well, I would say that, you know, as a founder or CEO, thinking about it as a joint process, right? It's not a one-way due diligence. Do your homework on your investors in the same way that they're doing homework on you. Get to know them. Ask them questions about how they see things. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're going to be on the cap table there with you, and they're going to have a voice, and so you want to make sure that there's alignment between you and them, and make sure that that's a working relationship that you're going to be excited to have for years to come.
All right. So finally, what are your predictions for the next 10 years of investing in Africa, or what do you want to see over the next 10 years in Africa?
First, one thing that to highlight is the fact that Africa, compared to all other regions, is the only market that really is seeing an increase in VC funding in this year. So I think that's a good sign. It's a good signal that we're heading in the right direction. What we'd like to see is just more of that. We'd like to see more inclusivity, not just in terms of, you know, gender. We want to see more countries as well receiving funding, more businesses coming up, more women being funded. And we also want to really be a part of that. I mean, as Capria, would love to be a part of that story, a part of seeing, you know, Africa continue to grow and continue to come up with more unicorns that are not just, you know, unicorns in Africa, but are companies that are able to cross over even to the first world countries and first world markets. So I think that would be my dream for Africa.
All right. Okay.
I think seeing the opportunity unlocked, right? As I mentioned earlier, with the increase in funding, there's still tens of thousands of entrepreneurs across the continent that are building exciting businesses. And over the next 10 years, you know, looking forward to continuing to see those companies that are really growing and scaling, not just across the continent, but on a global basis, and having those entrepreneurs and those companies really be household names.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Just one more thing.
Okay.
Another thing that we would love to see is a lot more local VCs coming up. So a lot less reliant on foreign investors. If we can just rely on our own capital, I think that would be great to see as well.
All right. So thank you so much, Jack, Lorraine. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining me today on the podcast. But before we go, a few things. Please share and like this episode. You can also catch up with previous episodes at Equity Merchants Show.